Right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Health Wealth Podcast. We've got another great episode for you this week. I'm joined by another great guest. And this week we have Steve Washuta. I hope I pronounced that correctly. With us, he's a personal trainer. He's got experience of many years. He also works with fitness coaches, and he's also an author and has written a few books as well. So we're going to get some great insight from him today. So, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm glad to speak to you and your audience about anything fitness and health related and wealth. Let's add that in as well.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. That's it. Everything. That's the perfect trio, which makes for happy and healthy people. So first off, Steve, give us a little background on yourself and where you started from, how you got into the health fitness industry and the journey you've been on.
Yeah, I'd say I joined the fitness industry late. I think I became a certified personal trainer at 24, 25, maybe not later than a lot of people, but certainly nowadays there are fitness professionals getting into it right away, right? They start lifting at 16 or 17, and that's the direction they're going. I worked in sort of corporate America, worked in public relations and at a hedge fund, and hated those jobs and felt that fitness was a calling for me. So I became certified through the National Academy of Sports Medicine. And like a lot of people in my industry, after you get first certification, you don't know what to do because there's no guidance as to how to run your business, how to be successful. It's sort of the wild, wild west. How do you make money in this commission-based cream rises to the top business? So I failed for years. I was not successful until I was. I kept trying different things and I found the right concoction. And that's why I wrote the book Fitness Business 101, What the Certifications Don't Teach You. And again, I want to emphasize the 101. I'm not telling people how to build a $45 million empire. I'm just telling you, if you're a brand new person into health and fitness, I can help guide you to be successful along your journey. And then in addition to that, I also still personal train. I consider myself, speaking of finance, you have financial advisors. I consider myself a health advisor. I don't just personal train. I take everything into account, whether it's your stress, your sleep, and your nutrition, obviously, and things of that nature to make sure you're a well-rounded, healthy person.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because I think, like you said, I think we often bundle health and fitness together. But to me, health and fitness can be quite different. As you said, I think health is everything. Fitness is just, in the gym and what you can do. But health, as you said, sleep, diet, your stress, even your finances can come into it because they are a stress. So yeah, that's great. Tell us a bit more about your book. You know what inspired you to write it? And obviously you said it's kind of a guide for people setting up. So what kind of things are people going to learn from that book?
Well, I had an injury. I had a double inguinal hernia surgery. It's hard to say that it was acute. I just think it was wear and tear over time from lifting. And during that time period, I was off work for about 3 weeks. And I don't know. I just had the energy and the impetus to do something important while I had 3 weeks off of work. So I just sat down and grinded and wrote this book out. But the book is, when you think of, you hear the terminology fitness business, some people think, oh, Steve's going to tell me he's going to have a spreadsheet about how much things cost and all these like little moves to make. No, not really what it's about. You yourself are your own fitness business. So how do you become introspective enough to know what you do well and you don't do well so you can take advantage of that in the fitness industry? So for example, maybe you feel like, Ryan, that you're really good with people and that you can start conversations, you can put on a good show, but you don't know the body that well yet. You're a brand new personal trainer, anatomically, kinesiology speaking, you don't know all the best stretches and all the best moves. Well, there's still a space for you in the fitness industry. You can run group fitness classes where you don't have to be that knowledgeable, and vice versa. Maybe you're a math and science brain, but you're a little awkward. You don't know how to put on a good show. You're not an intra trainer, as I call it. Well, then maybe you do assessments of people. Maybe you work remotely. There's a space for you, but you have to be introspective about your skill set. Because, like I said earlier on in the start of this, the cream rises to the top. So, if you want to make money and make this your full-time gig, you have to take advantage of your skill sets you already have in your life.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I agree. You need to play to your strengths, don't you? Not everyone's the same. And with a lot of things you find with a blueprint, whatever you say, like to be successful in certain areas, it's often just there's one box and everyone's got to fit into it. But like you say, we don't. So yeah, that sounds brilliant. I'd encourage anyone interested in that to get hold of you. But just let us know as well, where can people find it if they do want to get hold of it?
Fitnessbusiness101.com. Simple as that. It's there. I mean, it's on Amazon. There's also an audiobook version that Amazon sells as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Right. I think let's get into, I'd like to get some fitness tips from you for maybe for people who are starting out And they don't know too much. They're just starting out. What are some good tips that are going to help them from not making those early mistakes that people make, and just allow them to get started in the correct direction?
Yeah, well, first I would say, as your fitness and health advisor, not your just your personal trainer, right? If I was your financial advisor, I will tell you that you should not worry about the short-term goals as much as the long-term goals. It's fine to have short-term goals. Let's compare health and wealth here. We're on the Health Wealth Podcast. Let's do it. If you have financial advisors looking over your programs and looking over all of the things that you do to for money, your wealth, he's going to have retirement in his plans, right? I need to know if you're saving money. I need to know if you're spending money in the right way. We need to budget. We need to do all of these things. Yeah, you might have some short-term goals. Hey, I wish I need $30,000 in the next 2 years to start this business, and he'll help you do that. But ultimately, it has to be a global, macro, long-term perspective. So from a health perspective, as a health advisor, I would say the same thing. If you have a short-term goal and you want a six-pack or something, great, that's fine. But let's first focus on long-term goals. You want to become healthier? What are the things we could do to become healthier? Well, let's look at your sleep. Let's look at your water intake and all of these things. But from a pure fitness perspective, to get down into granular fitness stuff, there are seven central movements I think are really important. It's push, pull, hinge, rotate, lunge, squat, and plank. And we just want to really get you moving in all of these different directions. I'm not worried about weight at first. I'm not worried about the duration of all these things, or the specific exercises. I'm worried about movement, because we have to make sure that you're healthy and that your joints are healthy and that your ligaments are healthy. And we know from all the studies that movement is so important for long-term health and wellness. It's not just about being jacked and having a lot of muscle and having a six pack. I always say health is in your labs, not in your abs. Let's make this about health. So move in all directions, start slowly. Don't go from 0 to 60 with a personal trainer. If you don't have the money to use somebody on a regular basis, that's fine. What I do and what other personal trainers do is we'll design you a workout. You go do it on your own, design you a few workouts, and then come back to us in a month or two. You don't have to use us on a regular basis if you don't have the finances to do that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. The long-term goals is so key. I always try and advise people when I'm speaking to people on health things, is it's got to be long-term. Like you said, short-term goals are just like stepping stones, but you need those long-term goals. Absolutely. And, you know, like you were saying, movement is so key. Again, people get caught up in trying to lift big weights or trying to do things they see other people do in the gym. But as you said, especially when it comes to, we're talking about health is wealth. It is being able to move and being able to be free. You know, when you're getting to 60, 70, if you're able to move around freely and do the things that you want to do, that's good health, isn't it? I mean, are you...
Right. Let me add to that point. I work with seniors. That's the largest part of my clientele. So I tell people I see the future, because I know what's to come, right? I know the joint replacements. I know the pain. I know all of these things that are to come. So I want to make sure that doesn't happen for a lot of my younger clients. And you want people have these dreams of retiring, right, Ryan? They go, I want to retire and take trips to Bali or Hawaii or do all these like cool things, right? Maybe Rome, walk around Rome, do all these things. Well, the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you have two things, health and wealth, a la your podcast. Yeah. So many people are focused on just one portion of those. Like maybe they're focused on wealth and they have a 401k and retirement accounts and they're saving money, but they're sitting in a chair all day long and they're eating fast food and they're not taking care of their bodies and they're not moving around. So when the time comes to retire, they have the money to do it, but they're in a wheelchair, so they can't walk around Rome. So, you know, you have to make sure that you have both of these things and think about the long-term perspectives of when I'm 50 and 60, I want to have a lot of money, but I also need to have the health too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's finding that balance, isn't it? And I think, I don't know what you find in your experience, but in my experience, I find that in today's society, we're very skewed towards the wealth side. People value wealth, but we don't really seem to value health very highly. I don't know if you found the same in your dealings with people.
I would say what we do value is vanity. So they'll value vanity almost, you know, as much as they do wealth, but vanity is not health. There's a big difference, right? So people are saying, hey, I want to lose 40 pounds. Give me the latest and greatest drug. I don't care that it hasn't been on the market long enough for, you know, proper double blind testing. And I don't care what are the long-term ramifications. I want to lose 30 pounds. I want to look good on the outside. Well, a lot of times in 2024, the outside does not match the inside. People look You know, look, if I were to give a financial analogy here, you know, there's people driving Lamborghinis down the street. That doesn't mean they're not in debt. That doesn't mean they don't have, you know, money in places, you know, that they shouldn't. So I think we need to look at the fact that, you know, vanity is not health, and we shouldn't conflate those two things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great analogy that you use, because as you said, there's people in the gym who look in great shape, but inside they could be, you know, a mess. And I think a lot of them are, due to the fact there's a lot of misinformation about the best way to do things. And like you said, you know, you could lose weight doing absolutely any diet possible. You know, just losing weight doesn't mean you're being healthy at all.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's a start, you know, for people. I would never tell someone, hey, don't have the goal and the initiative to lose weight. Of course, that's great. You should. But don't take shortcuts, you know, enjoy the journey like you do anything else. And that's also part of my book, is saying, like, you know, so many people in the personal training industry say, I'm going to tell you how to get clients. Here's a way to get clients. Here's a way to get clients. Well, if you don't actually become a good personal trainer, you're going to lose those clients because you won't meet their goals. And then what happens? You start this sick cycle where you then chase down clients, you lose clients. You chase down clients, you lose clients, because you're not actually good at your job. So just enjoy the journey, whether you're saving money, whether you're trying to get healthy, or whether you're in the fitness industry and you're trying to become a professional. You're going to start slow. You're not going to make a lot of money first. You're going to not make a lot of progress at first, but that's just part of the journey. And that learning is, you should enjoy that part of it.
Absolutely. I think the journey, once you can get to that point where you appreciate the journey and you enjoy the journey and understand that the journey is the experience, I think then it becomes a lot easier to do these things and to reach your goals, because, you know, the journey is part of it, and it's where you learn. It's everything. You can't get anywhere without going on a journey. So I think embracing that is a good thing. And what would you say, obviously you talked about being a good personal trainer there. What are some of the hallmarks of a good coach?
Yeah. First, I would say there's this new age thought where you don't need to be in good shape ever to be a good coach. You can, you know, you can be out of shape and you could still be a good coach sometimes, but it depends on the goals. And if you've been there and done that, you're going to have a better idea through your experiences how that can also be done. So I do think it's good to have been there and done that in some respects. Now, you might have gotten injured. You might be older. You might have kids. You might have a podcast, and maybe you can't stay in, you know, perfectly lean, great shape. But if you've done it in the past, you know what it takes to get there. So at some point, you should have done whatever it is that you're getting your client to do, I think, is important. Secondly, you want to be a good listener, because and you don't want to have one ideology and one set of principles that you can use. So if I say, Ryan, I know your goals are X, Y, and Z, but the only thing I do is Olympic lifting. This is, and you're like, well, my goal is to lose like 30 pounds, become a marathon runner. That might not work for you as a marathon runner, right? To only do Olympic lifting. So ultimately you have to use, you know, a broad set of skills to meet the goals of your client. And if you're so married to one thing only vegan diet, only, you know, only Olympic lifting, well, then you're going to have a niche audience and you're not going to be able to meet, you know, the client's goals. So I think those two things are important as a fitness and health professional. And like I said before, truly caring about your client, taking your time, growing slowly as a fitness professional, and not thinking of a client as a dollar. Like, hey, I just need to get as many clients as I can because I need to pay the bills, because that will come back to bite you in the butt.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I work with people with health conditions. So working on people to reverse serious health conditions. And, you know, every single one is different. And like you say, as a coach, it's easy that if you do something for one person, it works. It's easy for you to say, okay, well, I'll use that for everyone. But it doesn't work. Everyone is different. And like you say, you can't get married to that one thing and think, well, this worked for this person, so I'll do it for you. And if it doesn't work, it's your fault. So yeah, I think definitely being flexible, being open is definitely something that's important as a coach, for sure.
But it's the hardest part of the fitness industry, especially when talking with clients, because I'm sure this happens to you all the time, Ryan. A client comes up to you and says, oh, I just read about this. You know, I just read about this new keto diet. I just read about this new drug on the market. I just read about this new, you know, Tabata workout, whatever they're doing. Everyone wants the latest and greatest thing because they think there's these secrets. It's like, no, this is pretty simple, actually, right? We have to work hard. We have to be, you know, mentally and psychologically in a good place. We have to take our time. We have to eat properly. We have to eat whole foods. and we'll get there. There are no special secrets or shortcuts. We're going to have to work with you and your body and do all the right things.
Yeah, absolutely. I find that with supplements is one of the killers for that, isn't it? Everyone wants just a magic supplement that will change their life. It's like, no, you have to put the work in. There's no magic supplement that will change your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, one other thing I know that you have some views on and you're an expert in that I'm really interested in because I haven't really looked into it, is about the roles of AI in health and fitness. So tell us a bit about that. I don't know if that's stuff that's already happening or stuff that's going to happen in the future, but that's very interesting.
Yeah, so both of what you said, there are some stuff happening, but really my concern is what will happen in the future, what will inevitably happen. So right now, from a, let's say, a business side, a personal trainer side, there's a lot of AI tools that you can use to help you out. There's AI tools that will help you design workouts. They're not great yet. They'll get there. But there's certainly AI tools that will help you write copy. So if you want to write a specific like emails out, or if you're trying to DM potential clients and things of that nature, there's a lot of AI images now. You can go into AI image generators. So there's a lot of AI tools that you can fuse with your business. On the, you know, the more, I would say, the practical side of like training and things of that nature, it's coming down the pipe. And what I would tell personal trainers is what differentiates us from a robot is the first word in that. Personal, right? There's a personal side to personal training. There's a connection you have with your clients. They trust you. You trust them. You're ready to pivot on a dime. And they've done large scale studies, longitudinal studies on this. Like the amount that you trust your coach is, there's a causal pattern between that and your success. So it's really important that you trust your coach. Some AI, you really like, that's not, there's no true trust built with an AI. It's just spitting out a program for you. So even if hypothetically, Ryan, somebody's goal, like we just said before, is to become a marathon runner. And AI, you know, you could type in all the information. My name's Bob. I'm 36 years old. I weigh 165 pounds. This is my lab work. I upload everything to an AI machine and it gives me the perfect workout. Well, what about the accountability factor? You know, what happens when Bob sprains his ankle and he's down and out and he can't train for 2 weeks? How does he pivot? You know, there's so many little things that matter in health and fitness that you talk about on your podcast and I talk about on mine that I don't think in the meantime are going to be, you know, done by a robot. So it's important for us in the fitness industry to take advantage of the personal connection. And if you were thinking of scaling and going online and just writing out workouts, I would advise you to do the opposite of that. Be more personal, sell more personalized features, have less clients, do more for them and charge more.
Yeah. I think it kind of ties back into as well where you said about one of the things of being a good coach is having the experience of having done it yourself, having been there, which again, a robot, you know, doesn't have that. It's not been there and done it. And you want someone who's been there and done it. Like you said, we're talking about, you know, finance and then health. You know, I'm not going to take finance advice from someone who's broke, just like I'm not going to take health advice from someone who's unhealthy. So having been there and done it is something that only people have. Robots don't. So, you know, I agree it comes to that. And although AI can do some crazy things, as we said, everyone's different. Their situation's different. You have to adjust to that. And I don't think there's an algorithm that could account for everyone being just slightly different. You know, it could give certain results based on certain statistics, but yeah, that personal touch, I think definitely. I hope anyway, that's not going to be replaced by robots.
Well, also, I mean, just think about this. Think about if the person's goal was, hey, in 8 months, I want to be able to run a marathon, whatever it is. That seems outlandish, but let's go ahead and say that was the goal. The AI robot now thinks, okay, this is the goal. So maybe a client would report to me, hey, I had a bad day at work and my toddler kept me up to 4 a.m. I didn't sleep. And I forgot to bring my water bottle. I haven't drank any water today. And I would say, hey, listen, we're going to walk on the treadmill and talk. And we're going to have a long stretch session today. We're going to roll you out. We're going to have a stretch session, do a little massage, whatever. The AI robot might look at statistics and say, statistically speaking, we need X number of workouts to get you to this place. We're going to go work out today. We're going to go bust your butt. When that's the wrong move for that client on that day. So that's another reason why robots can't replace a good person in the health industry.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. When it comes to coaches, I know, you know, some people are very forward and very shoving marketing and sales in your face everywhere on social media and things like that. What's the kind of approach you like to have when you're helping coaches? What do you advise people on with that? Because I think some people can get a bit too much, but obviously you've got to put yourself out there, haven't you?
You do. And it's important to have a niche, and it's important to put yourself out there. And listen, social media is a great tool. A lot of people, made their career online. I know a lot of trainers who've never really even trained inside of facilities. They just basically started online. I'm not telling people not to involve that. What I will say is, like I said earlier, it's good to learn slow, not focus on the marketing. Your goal shouldn't be, I want to be the best salesman of all time. Your goal should be, I want to be the best personal trainer. How do I do that? How do I translate those things? So first I say to coaches is you really want to work in multiple places when you're starting out. If you're like a fitness industry teacher of any sort, because what that does is that allows you to see how different systems run. It allows you to meet various personal trainers. It allows you to look at different equipment. Some gyms have different equipment than other gyms, obviously, right? So it gives you a really and different demographics. Like we just talked about, I work with seniors. Maybe one gym has a high senior population. The next one has teenagers. The next one has people in 20s and 30s. So it's good to see the demographics, all the toys and tools and fitness, all the different systems and ways people go about it, so that you can really start to narrow down what is my niche, what am I passionate about, what am I going to be good at. I think that's important. But really, what I tell coaches is also what we talked about earlier: what are you already good at? What is your family? What are people in your family tell you you're good at? What do people compliment you on over and over and over? If they go, "Oh, you're such a great jumper," right? When I see you playing basketball, you jump so high, you're so smooth. It's just like the coolest thing to watch you jump. It's like, okay, well then develop a jump program, right? Like it's in front of your face. Even if you don't love that, even if your goal was to help people run marathons, that's not what you're gifted at, right? You're gifted at jumping. People tell you this over and over and over. Take these compliments, put it into part of your business model to become successful. I think people overlook that a lot. We all overlook compliments. Sometimes compliments are awkward, right? Someone compliments you on something. They go, "Hey, Ryan, I love how you run your podcast." And you go, "Oh, okay, thank you." And you change the subject. So I think we have to take those compliments in and see how do I integrate those skill sets I already have into my business to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, using the skills you've already got and the talent you've got. And as you said, I think it's very easy for us to not even notice what our talents are. Like you said, you have to pay attention to that. We could be brilliant at something and we don't even realize it until eventually maybe you eventually get enough compliments or you actually look at yourself and realize.
You say we can. I say we are. I say more people are than
Yeah.
not. Like if I were to sit down and just go in the street and grab 100 people and say, what do you think you're absolutely best at? And then I were to sit down and ask all their family members and friends, I don't think they would get it right. I think we're kind of naive to what we're really good at because we're so good at it, we don't see it.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it's very different. A little while back, I had on the podcast a guy called Thomas who was on, I don't know, have you seen Married at First Sight?
I
The
have.
TV show. Yeah, so he was on the UK version. I spoke to him about his fitness journey. But one of the interesting things he said about was that watching the show back gave him this really weird perspective of being able to see how he was from the outside. And we never get to see that. We never see ourselves from other people's eyes. So that's that he said that really opened his eyes to a lot of things. So I suppose it's trying to appreciate other people's point of view better because they have a better view than we do of ourselves.
That's true. That's very true. And sometimes it's for the better, sometimes it's for the worse, right? Sometimes
Yeah.
people are too overconfident and who they are and what their skill sets are, and then they get humbled and vice versa. Usually it's that people don't really take an account of how good they are at something. And I think integrating that into your business model is really important. But also from a marketing perspective, there's so many tricksters out there, people who are just trying to make a buck, and they're faking it. And if you lose that authenticity, even a little bit, it's really going to hurt you down the road in your business, even if it's just virtually and you try to run away. So just don't, be authentic. People will sort of cling to that. They enjoy that authentic. And then be a professional, right? You're a podcaster. I'm a podcaster. I actually don't even consider ourselves podcasters because you take your job seriously. You're professional. I would say you're a professional interviewer, Ryan, right? So because of that, it doesn't matter if 6 people are listening or 6 million. If you take it seriously and do the right things, you gain followings, you gain clientele, and I think that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think building reputation is important in everything. My day job as well as the health coach, my day job, I have a carpentry business and it's built on reputation. Same thing. I think coaching's the same. The best way to get out, you've got to put yourself out there. But I think having a reputation where, yeah, you know, he did what he said he would. You know, he did this for me and changed my life. I think that's the best way to do it, is reputation, definitely.
Yeah, people don't think that anymore though, Ryan. Yeah. I think there's this idea, because of online, because you can see, oh, look at this person's got 2 million followers and they can just do X, Y, and Z. That's a small percentage of people. It's a risky proposition. And I still tell people, building your local worth, like you were just talking about, is really, really important.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Definitely. Just jumping back to tips for people starting out, because obviously spoke a bit on fitness in terms of dietary side, in terms of eating. You know, if someone comes to you, they've not really got a clue, they've just been eating a standard diet, are there a couple of things that you'll start with trying to encourage them just to change? Because obviously, again, like with the fitness, you don't want to change too much at once because it's going to be too much for them. What are things you like to start with on that side?
First, I would tell them, you know, I was speaking my podcast maybe 2 years ago with an obesity medicine specialist, and he uses this term, so I'm going to use it too, this aha moment. You know, the aha moment when you finally figure something out, you'll have that eventually, but you're going to fail over and over and over. I don't even like to use the term fail, but there's going to be struggles over and over and over. So don't beat yourself up in this journey. Right now, your signals are sort of scrambled. If you've been eating a lot of these processed foods, you know, I don't know what you call them in the UK, but you have like Doritos or, you know, McDonald's and all these things. There are companies in America like Nabisco and Frito-Lay that literally have entire science departments designed around getting you addicted. They have special synthetic flavors. They look and hear how the chip snaps, because that also plays a role in how addicted you get to these foods, right? So you're scrambled in your head right now. We're going to take you slowly away from these foods. We're not going to just pull them all from you, but slowly we're going to integrate healthier versions of foods, more natural foods, and we're going to find a way to get you healthy. Now, do calories matter? Sure. We can count calories. It's not for everybody. Some people want an Excel spreadsheet because that's what's best for them and they want to record everything. And some people who might maybe have an eating disorder, that's not good for them. They'll get too obsessive. So we have to work with individuals, as we talked about in the health industry. But overall, you know, it doesn't matter what diet you pick. We want to stick to something. We want to get to that aha moment where it becomes really easy. That could, for some people, it could be a month. For some people, it could be a year. And we want to slowly integrate whole foods into your diet, substituting out the artificial and fake foods.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. It's, you know, again, that's another thing that I talk about a lot when I'm talking about health with people, is just, we got to get back to eating real food. Just that's going to make a huge difference to your life. You know, you go to the supermarket nowadays and 90% of what you see in that store, it's just processed rubbish. It didn't exist 100 years ago, and it's not really real food. And unfortunately, we're chucking all that in our bodies. So yeah, back to real food is a brilliant first step for people, I think.
Yeah. And again, work with yourself, work with a professional like Ryan, and build a game plan. But I would say for most people, don't be too structured, right? So starting off slow, what I find is there's so many people in this world who just want to go from 0 to 60, right? They want to go as fast as they can. And then inevitably, that's just not going to hold up. You're going to fail. If your diet consists of basically junk food and food from the middle of the grocery store, and then instead of the outsides of the grocery store where all the stuff that expires is, right, the healthier stuff, if tomorrow you go, okay, I'm going to just go all natural foods, fruits, vegetables, and some lean meats, and I'm going to cut out everything else, you're going to fail. Most people are going to fail. You can't do that overnight. You have to slowly integrate. What you should say is, you know what? My dinners, I'm not going to even change my breakfast or my lunch. All my dinners are just going to be healthy. I'm going to go to the supermarket on a Sunday. I'm going to buy my dinners for the week, so I know them in advance. And this is food that spoils, so it's already in my fridge. So I know that I have 5 days to eat this food, or I just wasted my money. And I'm just going to make healthy dinners. When I've done that for 2 straight weeks with no problem, then I'll work to lunch. Then I'll work to breakfast. And when I've done all three of those, maybe 6 months down the line, then I'll start seeing, well, how can I integrate some health, even healthier food choices, right? Slow baby steps, just like wealth, just like, you know, compounding interest of your 401k and your IRAs. That's what we need to think of in our health.
Yeah. There's another perfect analogy. I used that one recently about the compounding effect. you know, like with money, the compounding of interest, and you do, you get the same with your life, you know, as you make these small, people think, oh, I don't, well, I'm only making a little change, it's not going to make a difference. Like, yeah, but you make a little change every week, and very soon it adds up to a lot, you know. And like you said, I don't actually like to use the word diet because that scares people. We just like to talk about lifestyle, like make lifestyle changes. You just want to make it a habit, don't you? The where, like you said, okay, just change your dinner. Once that's natural, when you know, okay, well, that's what I'm doing for my dinner every week, then you move on to something else.
Yeah. And speaking of that, yeah, you're exactly right. About that aha moment, if we compare this to fitness as well, you know, what people don't talk about, like Ryan and even me, is not only do I like enjoy exercise, I need exercise. Meaning like it's, you know, you have these people online say like, woke up at 4:30 AM, got this tough workout in, like they achieve this thing. It's like, it's really not that hard once you've done it for so long. Like, not only is it not hard, I need it. I like it. I enjoy it. I would be more pissed if you didn't allow me to work out. Yeah. So I think there needs to be, you know, we need to relay that to our clients to say, hey, I know this, because we forget, because we've been doing it for so long. I know this sucks now. I know this diet stuff sucks now. I know you don't crave, you know, blueberries and, you know, vanilla protein shake. And I know you don't love to do squats now. At some point you will. At some point, there'll be an aha moment. The physiological and psychological benefits will be there for you, and you will enjoy it. We just have to push through.
Yeah, absolutely. There was last week or the week before on the podcast, I had a guest on, Harvey, who was sharing his story. He's lost, you know, a load of weight, got himself back in shape. And he kind of talked about that. He had that, you know, what you're describing, that aha moment, kind of where he actually began to enjoy the gym. And it was once he'd got it so embedded that he knew he was going to the gym every day. It wasn't even a choice to go to the gym. He just knew he was going. And then he began to enjoy it more. That was the aha moment for him, because he wasn't thinking, oh, do I go, do I not? He was like, well, I'm going, so I might as well just enjoy it.
Yeah. And we all have that in some way, like somewhere in our life. And I think it's important as people, like what we do, Ryan, is to find where that is with you and then try to like connect with your clients. So for me, it's reading. So I get into these stints where it's like picking up a book, I'll read a chapter and I'm like, I just don't feel like reading right now. And I just, you know, I'll put on Peaky Blinders. So it's like, it's, you know, and then I get in some stints where I've done it. Like I read through a whole book and now I'm in my reading zone. And then I pick up another book and then I pick up another book. And before you know it, I've read 4 books in 2 weeks. Right. So that's what I try to like relate to clients. It's like, yeah, you'll get into that zone eventually. It's just, it's really hard when we first start out.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's jump back to the fitness side, because I know you said you work with seniors a lot. So obviously, you know, I imagine if someone who, let's say the 60-year-old, they haven't done exercise in ages, they're out of shape, they want to just start improving their health, they're coming to you. That's going to be very different to, let's say, someone who's 20 years old, they've done some sport in school, they've got a bit out of shape and they're starting. I imagine, is that going to be a very different place that they're going to start at in terms of the fitness side?
Yeah, it's a very different place for a few reasons. One is, I don't like to call it corrective exercise, but it is a little bit more of a corrective exercise approach you have to take with the senior, because ultimately they've probably done a lot of damage to themselves over time, that, and things you want to kind of fix before you get started and to like building bad patterns and bad habits. I'd also maybe I'll take a step back. When you sit down with someone for the first time as a fitness professional, you should have a health history form of some sort. And that's just talking with your client about all the things, maybe it's their medications they're on, any major injuries they have. Nobody ever writes out everything they're supposed to write out, because inevitably the things that happen to us, we don't think are serious, right? So I'll have a client and then I'll find out two weeks in, oh yeah, I had a heart attack 3 years ago. It's like, well, you didn't put that on your health history form. Or I see there's a problem with their gait. And they said, yeah, you know, I had a really bad leg break when I was in college. I'm like, I know that you're 58 now, but that matters, because that leg break caused compensation and synergistic dominance and other muscles to get weak and other muscles to get strong and you to favor certain muscles. So I need to know everything. So the older they are, chances are the more you have to dig into that, right? The more injuries they've had, the more problems they have. But yes, with an older client, right away, I say, right now we're focused on movement. I don't care about load. I don't care about weight. I'm going to put you in different movement patterns. I'm going to make sure that, you know, we have joint health, because as you get older, there starts to be joint replacements. I want to make sure that we can avoid that down the road. And once we're moving through all the proper patterns correctly, then I'll start with load and we'll work towards that. But otherwise, yeah, with a younger person, I would start with load quicker, maybe do some more dynamic things because I'm not as worried about injury or correcting prior injuries.
Yeah, that's true. That with the older people, the longer they've, especially the longer they've had in poor health, the more damage they've done, haven't they? So the more that needs correcting. In terms of frequency of exercise as well, you know, do you have a preference that you like people to only work out a couple of days a week and have days off in between, or does it completely vary with different people?
I would say sometimes it's goal dependent. It really is goal dependent. But if we're just talking general health and wellness for the general population, I would say try to do something 6 days a week. When I say something, it could literally be, maybe I'm just stretching today. Maybe I'm going to take 20 minutes to wake up early in the morning and stretch, do some dynamic and static stretches. Maybe it's taking a 30-minute walk at lunch. I would count either of those things as one of your 6 days. Two or three of those days should be hard, right? Maybe two moderate workouts. And I do think eventually, once you're there, once you've built the foundation, you should try to have one workout a week that kicks your butt. I think it's good. I think it's good for you mentally to push through that psychologically. Yeah. I think it's obviously good for you physiologically, because ultimately the only way to build muscle is to wear the muscle out, break it down, try to explain it to clients. Like, you have calluses on your hands. Why do they form? Well, because that skin eventually says, we need something hard on top of this because you're ripping us apart. You're doing damage. Well, that's what happens with your muscles, right? We have small micro tears in our muscles. They rebuild back stronger. That's how we get stronger. So I would say once we build a foundation, one hard workout a week, two moderate workouts a week, and then another 3 days of just doing something and moving your body.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to make, that a lot of people in fitness, they have this idea that you're either working out in the gym intense or you're having a rest day and doing nothing. But like you said, movement is key. And as you said, rest days can be, you know, just recovery day. Like you said, stretching, walking, just being active is the important thing. I think the thing that really is damaging our health so much is we're so sedentary, aren't we? We're just people sitting in office all day. They go home, they sit in front of the telly, and we're just sitting, and just getting up and moving makes quite a difference. So I think that's a really important point that you made there, that, you know, a rest day doesn't mean doing nothing.
Yeah, I make this point a lot. Let's go through an average day of an accountant. Let's say I was maybe laying in bed for 8.5 hours asleep. I wake up, I go sit down at the kitchen counter, eat my breakfast. Then I go sit down in my car, drive 30 to 45 minutes to my job. I sit down at my desk, sit there for 8 hours, get back in my car, drive 45 minutes home, sit back down at that kitchen counter, eat dinner, sit on the couch, watch 2 hours of Netflix, and then go back and lay in the bed for 8 hours, right? So that entire day was either you laying or sitting down, except maybe the walk to the car, the walk to the bathroom. And that's just normal for people. And yeah. I wonder if you've ever had this, Ryan, but I, you know, a lot of times I'll have a client who comes back to me from vacation and they've lost weight and they're so surprised. They go, Steve, I was drinking wine, I was eating what I wanted, and somehow I came back 2 pounds lighter. Said, well, okay, there could be some water weight things going around here. Like, I'm not going to speak to all the specifics on the science, but what I will say is, where were you? They're like, oh, we're in, you know, Paris. It's like, okay, what'd you do? Oh, we walked here. We did this. I'm like, so you're telling me all you did the whole time was walk. You were happy. You were out in the sun, right? Like, these are the things that make a person happier. And these are the things that psychologically and physiologically are going to help you lose weight. So yes, I know you think you were eating whatever you want and being bad, you know, quote unquote, being naughty as far as their diet was concerned, but you were also doing so many things that are positive for the body. And that's a piece of this puzzle that people are missing.
Exactly. If you look at, you know, traditional tribes, there's not that many left that are completely traditional now, but, you know, they're all in good shape and healthy and they don't have gyms. They're just active. You know, they're just walking, they're doing the general things, out hunting, lifting, carrying, building stuff, and you know, that keeps them healthy. So that's an important thing that we've lost as humans. I mean, there's many things we've lost from how we should live traditionally, but I think that's an important one we've lost. And it's really important to get away from that sedentary stuff and try and do something every day.
I'm going to ask you questions now too.
Sure.
What is the current state, if you know, of like the UK as far as schools are concerned, and like what we call gym class or physical education. Do you have that? Is it in all grades? Are they taking that out? How does that work?
We have it still, but it's, as far as I can tell from when I was at school and what it is now, it's not much of a focus, you know, and it's, you know, it's not much, they don't teach you much in terms of fitness. It's just, they might play a little game or they get some people in to do something, you know, the kids aren't that active, which is sad and is a shame that I think there should be a lot more of it really.
Yeah, that is a shame. It's same thing is happening here in the States. It used to be absolutely mandatory.
Yeah.
They used to have like physical tests where you would win like awards if you were able to do like, you know, whatever the 5 or 6 physical tests under whatever markers that they made. They threw that all out the window now. And yeah, they play some games. It's not even mandatory. And it's a big part of the problem because, you know, my wife's a pediatrician and her passion is childhood obesity, ensure children stay active. And the rates in America are going, you know, skyrocketing through the roof. And people point the finger too much at food. Food certainly plays a role, but the kids not being as active is just as big of a piece of the pie.
Yeah, I agree. Because as well, when they go home, they're not active either. I'm sure you were same as me. When I was a kid, we were just out playing when we were at home. Now they're sitting in front of a computer, in front of the TV or on a phone and tablet, and they're not getting any movement at home or at school. So it's double the trouble.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, we had video games. It's not as if we didn't play video games as children. We did, but we enjoyed going outside. It was probably equal parts, if not more outside than inside. And yeah, you don't see that anymore. And it's, you know, I think if the school systems bring PE back, bring physical activity back, that does a lot for long-term health. Because, you know, then people stay what I consider a recreational athlete. That's what I consider myself and you. I just want more people to be recreational athletes, right? Go out, play tennis, you know, play football, do those things. Those are also active things. You don't just have to go to the gym and lift,
yeah,
right? Just move around, be active.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it. And I think on a recent podcast, again, we were talking about what health and fitness means, what it means to be healthy. And one of the things I said about was just having the freedom to be able to do, like if someone says to me, oh, you know, we've got a 5-a-side game tomorrow night, can you play? I can play knowing full well I'm fine to do it. Whereas, you know, there's some people where they'd be like, well, I can't because I'm not physically able. And that's sad because you're not free.
I think that's a great point. I've said the same exact thing. I gave a certainly a more Americanized analogy on, you know, for Thanksgiving. You know, what's one of our major holidays, a lot of people will come home, right? So yeah. Wherever you live, you kind of come home, you see your family. So a lot of friends end up meeting up on Thanksgiving. And one of the things we would do is we play our pickup football, American football games. And a lot of my friends just can't do it anymore, right? I'm only 38 and I have no problem. I could jump into a flag, not tackle football, but just play flags. So you have flags around you and you take the flags off. And a lot of them just can't do it, right? They're riddled with injuries. They're overweight. They have so many health complications. And to me, that's sad that you can't just up and start playing a game of soccer or football on a whim because of the fact in your 30s, in your late 30s, because of the fact that you let yourself go.
Yeah, completely. I agree. That's why, again, it goes back to the whole, you know, health is wealth argument that, you know, what you can't even do these simple things. What have you actually got in life when you can't even do them? And like you say, you know, I'm in my 30s too. You know, I have friends in my 30s who, as you say, struggle physically as well. You're not even halfway through your life and you're not able to do these things. What's the second half of your life going to be like? We, you know, again, back to the long-term thing, isn't it? You think about how are you going to be in 40 years, not in 4 minutes.
Yeah, touche. I mean, it's one of those things. Sometimes it takes a rude awakening, Ryan, unfortunately. Sometimes it takes one of those things where someone comes down with a bad injury or someone has an uncle or a father or a mother and they see them in really bad shape and they go, you know what? That's not going to be me. I'm not going to turn out like that. And they turn it around. But there's only so much we can do from this end. Helping the people who ask to be helped is all we can do.
Yeah, I agree. It is normally, you know, someone waits till they come down with a serious health condition before they start taking their health seriously. Whereas if they'd started a couple of years earlier, they'd have never reached that point, which is sad indeed. Yeah. Listen, thank you. You've given us plenty of your time. I don't want to take up too much, but before you go, I know you spoke earlier about some tips for people starting out, but for anyone who's interested in learning more about health and fitness and getting into health and fitness, what are just a, a couple good bits of advice you would give them for how to get started.
Sure. First, I would say do what you can to look up a local personal trainer of some sort. Again, I would say local. I work virtually and I would tell you not to do that because it's really important that they can see your body from 360, move around, have that conversation with you, right? Find somebody who's local. Meet with them just one or two times and say, and be honest with them. Hey, I probably won't work with you on a regular basis. I just want you to help design me a program. Number one, it'll keep you accountable because you got a little bit of skin in the game. You paid a little bit of cash up front, but it's not going to bankrupt you because you're not working with them on a regular basis. And also, you know, have them design something for you that you can do maybe in your home. If you're someone who doesn't have a gym or can't go to a gym, you can pick up 10-pound dumbbells and a band and a ball, and you can do everything in some, you know, in your living room, push the couch aside. So that's what I would say. Meet with a professional once or twice, have them build you out a program. It'll keep you accountable. Buy some weights in your home. Get started slowly.
I think that's brilliant advice. I think it helps always to get that little bit of expert help at the beginning because we learn by mistakes, don't we? But if we can learn from someone else's insights and their professional experience, then we don't have to make the mistakes. So I think that's definitely great advice. And listen, let us know as well, where can, if anyone wants to look you up, if they want to find your books, if they want to find out more about you, let us know where we can find you.
Sure. Both my full name and fitnessbusiness101.com are the same website. So if you type in Steve Washuta or fitnessbusiness101, they go to the same website. Also on Instagram, you can find me at Steve Washuta. That's W-A-S-H-U-T-A. And those are the best places to reach me.
That's awesome. We will put all of the links in the podcast description for you so people can find you easily for anything if they want to get in contact. And once again, thank you so much for your time. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Hopefully you have too.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you, everybody else, for listening. We will see you again next week for another episode, and let's get optimal together.